Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me.
Welcome to Third Paradigm, a weekly think tank on how to take back control of our cities, farmland and water, of money, production and trade, of media, education and culture, of religion and even of God. We focus on economics and community sovereignty, and we put religion in bed with politics with a socio-theological view of the Bible. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting from Free Radio Santa Cruz. Welcome to the seventh episode of Third Paradigm. Third Paradigm has gotten fan mail from some flounder, as Bullwinkle would say. But not just any flounder, an altruist in Bangladesh with a PhD in artificial intelligence. We'll look at this strange fish and what he's up to. And we'll look at a similarity between Rwanda and New Hampshire that Santa Cruz might take a lesson from. I'll play a video clip of a California carol from the Courage campaign and ask whether their solutions would work. And after a sleepless night from reading a report on the economic state of Santa Cruz County, I came up with this week's idea, Sim County, a game of sovereignty and survival that isn't at someone else's expense. This Sunday's sermon looks at the New Testament's infancy narrative, the story of Jesus' birth and how it fits historically. But first we'll start with a poem, Wild Peace by Yehuda Amichai. Wild peace. Not the peace of a ceasefire, not even the vision of the wolf and the lamb, but rather as in the heart, when the excitement is over and you can talk only about a great weariness. I know that I know how to kill. That makes me an adult. And my son plays with a toy gun that knows how to open and close its eyes and say, Mama. A peace without the big noise of beating swords into plowshares, without words, without the thud of the heavy rubber stamp. Let it be light, floating like lazy white foam. A little rest for the wounds. Who speaks of healing? And the howl of the orphans is passed from one generation to the next, as in a relay race. The baton never falls. Let it come like wildflowers, suddenly, because the field must have it. Wild peace. That's from the selected poetry of Yehuda Amichai, translated by Chana Block and Stephen Mitchell. I'm certain that when peace comes, and I don't say if, it will sneak up and spring at us with a sense of humor. If peace comes without humor and art and music and the swapping of recipes, I don't believe it can last. One listener is bringing peace to Bangladesh, one typing font at a time. Robin Upton went from the UK to Bangladesh in 98 after finishing his doctorate in statistics and artificial intelligence. He taught computing in an orphanage, but found that even though they had Bangla fonts on the computer, there was no way to use them. Over the years, he developed a typing system with website, installer, and documentation, and resolved to give it away for free. He contacted government officials, who didn't respond. He set up meetings with academies and councils, who seemed baffled by his lack of interest in selling it. But he persisted in putting it on the internet, where it's gotten a couple of thousand downloads, increasing steadily. It's open source and has attracted a community that's added new features, including support for Indian Bangla fonts. It's available at altruist.org, along with a wealth of resources for making altruism a viable social norm. His directory of 150 altruistic sites includes Radio for All, where Third Paradigm is posted weekly for download. Thank you to them for connecting us, and to Robin for letting me know that someone's listening. During this last week, I did a presentation for another altruistic group called Dining for Women. It's a national network of women who hold potlucks and donate what they would have spent on dinner out to a global women's cause. This month's recipient was a cooperative called Rwanda Knits. My presentation delved into the history of the Hutus and the Tutsis, which I'd never really understood before, and judging from the response, neither had many others. In the process, I learned some interesting statistics about Rwanda. After the genocide, the population left behind was 70% women. A law was passed that required women to fill 30% of parliament seats. Today, however, Rwanda's parliament is 56% women, including the speaker, out of 55% overall. By contrast, the U.S. population is 51% women, but Congress is only 16%. One state senate, however, is catching up to Rwanda as the first to have a female majority, little old New Hampshire. But that's not the only revolutionary thing about them. For a tiny state, they have an enormous legislature, 400 members, which is one for every 2,000 people. Each one is paid a whopping $100 a year plus gas money. This comes to $40,000 a year for 400 employees. Now that's a workforce budget even agribusiness would envy. Thinking about this, I did some quick calculations. Here in Santa Cruz County, we have 266,000 people. If we formed a countywide Congress with the same 1 to 2,000 ratio, it would have 133 representatives. But to make the Congress efficient, they'd have to have no power. Say what? Well, right now, city council meetings are taken up by people either asking for favors or people making complaints. If you had no power, you wouldn't have to deal with any of those people. The only people you deal with are other people committed to figuring out a solution to the big problems, like snowballing unemployment. With no clout and no pay, you wouldn't even need elections. Just provide a place to meet, access to data and officials, a mechanism to communicate with the public, and you're good to go. Oh, and one more thing, a mandate to come up with the best possible solution under the circumstances. To shoot down another solution without offering something better isn't an option. This latter element, a mandate for change, would make them fundamentally different than the National Congress, which has no such requirement. Congress tends towards inertia. If they do nothing, they can't be blamed. It's the original Hollywood version of Kill Bill. To get a bill ratified is a Sisyphean feat, but to kill a bill is all downhill. As we slip into the abyss of the Depression, it's unrealistic to expect Congress to change their stripes and be proactive. But for us, doing nothing in this crisis is not an option. We have to find our own solutions. We can and should debate why one solution is better or worse than another, but in the end, we have to choose something. If we develop local solutions with local buy-in, it would put pressure on the National Congress to come up with something better or allow us to enact our own laws. Do-it-yourself government may be a giant leap for mankind, but it's one small step for women in Rwanda, New Hampshire, or here at DIY Radio. But the National Congress isn't the only ones coming under budget pressure. Here in California, an organization called the Courage Campaign sent this Christmas carol to Ebenezer Arnold.
It was the worst of times. It was, come to think of it, it was just the worst of times. The great state of California was facing an overwhelming budget deficit. Its citizens were scared, all except for one, Ebenezer Arnold, who comforted himself with his Scrooge-like policies.
I tell you what, fire 100,000 state workers. Yeah. Cut retirement benefits. Hey, who needs nurses, firefighters, teachers anyway, huh?
But, sir, it's Christmas Eve.
Bah, humbug! This is my excuse to cut all of those girly man social programs, huh? Rip their hearts out, take an Uzi to them. It's funny.
Oh, we could raise the yacht tax!
Holy crap!
Just call me Ronnie.
I'm seeing dead presidents. Did something happen to my cranial?
I'm the ghost of California past. Back to remind you, Bonzo, that even Pete Wilson and I raised taxes when we faced a budget crisis.
But, you know, I promised no new taxes.
Well, you have to ask yourself, is California better off today than it was 5 years ago?
Oh, Maria, I'm having horrible nightmares. Like the Gipper would ever raise the taxes. Come on, that's crazy.
I'm not Maria. I'm the ghost of California Present. And I told you, you were letting the California dream die.
But, Maria...
$15 billion has been cut out of the state budget already, and you've asked for more?
But, Maria, you have to make the cuts.
Did you ever consider increasing revenues? No! You're destroying California!
It's about the mathematics. It's not about me.
Oh, it's always about you.
It's not a tombstone. It's not a tombstone.
Hey, it's me, W, the Grim Reaper. It's my new day job. You're doing a heck of a job, Arnie. That California dream is deader than a doornail. Mass unemployment, no health care, no schools, people fleeing the state in droves. It reminds me of that Katrina. I think I misunderstood you. You're the real succeeder-er.
I don't want to be Mr. 28% approval rating. I'm Conan, I tell you. I'm the last action hero. I'm the governator. Help me, Morgan Freeman. Where are you?
It doesn't have to end like this. Go to couragecampaign.org/CaliforniaCarol and sign a holiday card today demanding that legislators stop cutting and start saving California. Because if not...
I'll be back.
There are some high-powered activist groups behind the Courage campaign, and I'm sure they know what they're doing. But personally, I found the video thin on solutions. Ronald Reagan, the ghost of California past, tells Arnold to raise taxes. We already pay 25% federal income tax, 11% state, and 8% sales tax. If property taxes are added in, it could go to over 50%. Maria Shriver, the ghost of California present, tells her husband to raise revenues instead of cutting pensions for state employees. How does she suggest we do this? State employees, including the California Federation of Teachers, agreed to gamble with their pension fund by putting it in the stock market under the condition that taxpayers covered their losses. Now, that's a sweet deal. Are we okay with paying more state taxes in order to cover their bets? W, the ghost of California future, congratulates Arnie for being more ruthless than him, but the only alternative offered is buy an aid for closing the yacht tax loophole. That may be fine, but it would take a lot of yachts to float pension funds put into the stock market. To bring this back to the county level, our Senator, Barbara Boxer, sent out a California recession report in time for the holidays, which included a county-by-county fact sheet. In Santa Cruz, unemployment in October was 6.5%, which is over 17,000 people. The county cut 10% of its own workforce and implemented a 10% reduction in county programs. It expects that next year these cuts will be greater. 1 out of 33 homes have gone into foreclosure, which is 3,100 out of 103,000 houses. The food bank is overwhelmed, but on the positive side, our credit rating is still good for securing tax anticipation notes. I have to ask, why are we borrowing money rather than offering discounts for property owners who agree to have their taxes deducted monthly? It would help both homeowners and the county with cash flow. But not to worry about all this. Barbara Boxer is, in her words, focusing like a laser beam on saving and creating jobs. Obama's going to give the states grants to build bridges, green up buildings, fund Medicare, train police, and address the housing crisis. Again, I ask, how does this work? Why are we giving our money away in taxes only to beg, borrow, and steal it back? Maybe our problems are finally so insoluble that the state and the feds are willing to let the counties retain some of their own money in return for filling in the hole they've dug us into. Although I have to wonder how well we do. I just received my Friends of the Santa Cruz Public Library's newsletter. The director and assistant director are both retiring. So they've hired a professional recruitment firm out of Denver to do a nationwide search for a replacement. Let me get this straight. At a time when it's uncertain whether libraries will survive, and the county just laid off 10% with more to come, they can't find the most qualified person in Santa Cruz? My own background is in recruiting, and I do the job for free. Until then, I'm saving my donation for a more frugal cause. We'll break for a song by Annie DeFranco called Red Letter Year. When we come back, I'll throw out my idea for playing our way to survival, and then we'll do our post-Christmas debriefing on the birth story of Jesus. That was Annie DeFranco with A Red Letter Year. 2009 promises to be a red letter year in the sense of the Chinese curse, may your children live in interesting times. The layoffs being conducted are like a person who cuts off their arm when they have to lose 10 pounds. It'll only make it harder for us to get healthy, and I don't say again because there was nothing healthy about the way we've been living. In the last show, I talked about everyone tightening their belts one notch, reducing their salary and hours by 10% and committing 4 hours a week in free services to the community. This might hurt a little, but in a healthy way, like building muscle, rather than this socially transmitted gangrene of unemployment. We could make it unpatriotic to work more than 36 hours and deprive your neighbor of a job. In thinking about this idea, it occurred to me that we needed a way to play out social strategies without having to wait for the life and death consequences. There are a lot of ideas out there, but no process for testing them. There's also no way that uses the best of cooperation and competition to refine them. So here's my idea for making this crisis more fun. I'd like to partner with the makers of SimCity to help students produce an online, open-source game called Sim County, a game of sovereignty and survival that's not at someone else's expense. Here in California, each county would play against the other 57 counties, with stealing of ideas encouraged. The rules are that you can only ask for 3 wishes per year from the federal government, from the state, from local government, and from your fellow citizens. The objective is to make your county debt-free and self-sufficient by the year 2020 in food, shelter, energy, goods, and trade. To test your strategy against the program, you'll ask Cassandra and see how it pans out. Cassandra will be a database of where things stand at the end of 2008 and their logical relationships to each other. But it won't just deal with the crises that have already hit. Groups like the Institute for Policy Studies will put in their best projections for when new crises will hit, based on global trends and analysis. So the target keeps moving year to year. Sound impossible? The good thing about this game is that everyone wants you to win. If you win, we all win. If you don't play, we're all facing unemployment, starvation, and global meltdown. So what have you got to lose? Now, for a change of perspective, we'll go back 2,000 years plus or minus a decade and examine the birth story of Jesus. According to the Bible, Jesus was born during Herod's census, which is why Joseph and Mary went to Bethlehem even though they were Nazarenes. While they were there, 3 wise men from the east came to tell them that Herod was looking to kill the one that the prophecy said would displace him. So they went to hide in Egypt. To place the story in context, Herod, self-named the Great, died in 4 BC. There's no evidence that there was ever a massacre of the innocents, as the biblical event is called, which is the sort of thing that would have been recorded. When Herod died, a Roman proctorate was brought into rule. In 6 CE, or a common era, this proctorate effected a very unpopular census. Its purpose was to charge a per-head tax in occupied Judea, which the resistance movement saw as the first step towards land theft and slavery. Before this, Rome had collected a temple tax, which the resistors refused to pay, which is also relevant to the story where Jesus is asked if he'll pay the temple tax. The ruling Hebrew dynasties, called tetrarchies, had their own chambers in the temple, which may have been like bank vaults where they kept their wealth. On top of the temple, flouting the Hebrew prohibition against idols and images, the Romans had erected a giant golden eagle symbolizing their rule. But while Judea was in the hands of Hebrew collaborators with Rome, the elite benefited from the temple tax more than they put in. To go back to Jesus' birth, some of the facts had to have been changed. If Jesus was born during the census year, Herod the Great was already dead, and his son, Herod Antipas, wasn't yet ruling. The date of Jesus' birth is set at 1 AD, Anno Domini, or the year of the Lord, because the year zero doesn't exist. But this year doesn't match either the census or the rule of either Herod. At the start of next week's program, however, we'll look at 2 births that do correspond with the census. One is to an elite family that may have hidden in Egypt to avoid the tax. The other is the birth of an armed insurgency movement that started with an act of nonviolent resistance in relation to the temple eagle. Until then, this has been Teresa Caraggio as your host of Third Paradigm, broadcasting from Free Radio Santa Cruz. And thank you to Skidmark Bob for production and upping my street cred. Now when I go into the music store to pick up Devochka, the band we played a few weeks back, the guys behind the counter rave about it and hope that I haven't bought the last copy. So thanks, Bob, and thanks to you for listening. Whether you're in Bangladesh or down the street, send us a note to Teresa@retrometro.com and let us know. We'll leave you with a song from the movie Garden State to usher in what promises to be a pivotal year. It's Let Go by Frou Frou, which claims that there's beauty in the breakdown. Drink a beer.